Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hello and welcome to The Promised Land, a show about Manchester United and part of the 90 Min podcast network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by Rob Blanchett, talking football on the pitch stuff today. If you have not yet listened to our show about the 25% purchase of Manchester United shares by Ineos and Sir Jim Ratcliffe, please go back and listen to that. We released it on Thursday, but today we'll be looking at on-the-pitch issues, the thing that is quite important. United are between two matches over the holiday period, a win over Aston Villa, 3-2, dramatic win, and a trip to Nottingham Forest. We also haven't talked football since United lost to West Ham either, just before Christmas. But, Rob, we'll talk about the Villa game, but at least they won.
At least they won. Like, you know, at half time, I think we would have taken at least they won, wouldn't we? After being 2-0 down to some patheticness from our defence once more. Yeah, you got the points, didn't you? And of course, I think in the moment, it felt incredible that you managed to kind of salvage something from a losing position. And again, all the obituaries being written at halftime, I think, for Erik ten Hag, and myself guilty of that as well, because I think that first half for me felt more concerning than just being 2-0 down. It really felt that the players were miles off where they needed to be in terms of their pressing and their shape. Second half, Scott, they rose from the dead and became Manchester United once again somehow, and staged one of the great comebacks at Old Trafford. I think 3-2 against a team like Aston Villa, who are undoubtedly one of the best teams in Europe this year. Let's be honest. That's what they are. It was an amazing achievement for the team.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a bit more depth in a second. But subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch us on YouTube, The Promised Land and Manchester United Podcast. Like the video, subscribe, leave a comment. Pop the notification bell on as well so you never miss a show. We've done two this week, two in 2 days, Thursday and Friday. Apologies, it's the Christmas and New Year season for us, so our days are a bit off, a bit skewiff. But follow us on social media too, at @Dolan_ScottSaunders on X, Instagram and TikTok, @_Rob_B on X and YouTube, and @TPLMUFC on X as well, if you would like to give us a follow. But today, yeah, we'll be talking about the football and we'll be looking ahead to the Nottingham Forest game. United is so weird. I think I tweeted this, Rob. They're either the most boring team to watch in the league or one of the most entertaining. There's no real in between. Yeah. Like, I watched the West Ham game, obviously, and I think you did as well. And when you lose 2-0 to West Ham, having not really done too much, it was such a drab game, wasn't it? It was just whichever team produced a bit of quality for me, I think was going to be the winner. And I think West Ham ended up doing it with Lucas Paqueta's little chip over. United inevitably switch off and it leads to a goal. But they're winning 1 week and they're losing the next, and they're losing the next one, and then they're winning again. And they're, as we talk, I think, or before last night's result, I think they were sixth in the league. and still not too far out of touch with everything above them, but, you know, still quite a way back. And they have a Forest game with a new manager, Nuno, in charge. They're looking all right, you know. They're looking like they could spring a surprise or two. And it's a difficult place to go. They've beaten some big teams there since they've been promoted back to the Premier League. But, yeah, we're two-thirds of the way through the Christmas period of matches, and United play Forest on Saturday, and then they have a break for about a week in the FA Cup. I think they play on Monday night, don't they, in the FA Cup?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one Premier League match against Spurs in January. And that's it. So we're embarking on a rest period. Mason Mount's back in training, but after the Tottenham game, or maybe even before the Tottenham game, United might have some first-team players back involved. But where are we, Rob? Because I jumped on Five Live on Wednesday night, and I was asked, is this the moment where United can turn a corner? How many times we had that conversation? And that's what I said. I don't think you can be convinced that they will turn a corner, because they've got, you know, you remember the McTominay double in injury time, Brentford won it, and there's been some other big wins. The Chelsea win was really good as well. Well, they created a lot of chances anyway. But then they follow it up with a defeat, and it would not surprise you at all if they fell to defeat against Forest. So where are we at the moment?
Where are we? Oh, what a question. I think the thing is, Scott, quite often when you look at the story of Man United week to week and month to month, is that it's not actually one game and the next game. It kind of feels it gets eked out. So let's go to the timeline of West Ham, yeah? So at West Ham, do you know what? You did all the right things to start off with. 68 and 70 minutes worth of pure control. You bossed that game. The stadium there in East London, was quiet and silent.
People don't want to hear that, Rob, though.
That's why I've got to say it.
People don't want to hear it. And I think Ten Hag said it afterwards. I agreed with him. And I think you just said you agreed too.
Yeah.
But they didn't take their chances. Like they had a couple of winning the ball high up the pitch, and obviously Garnacho had that chance to score. If you score in that situation, it changes the dynamic of the game, and maybe West Ham, they fall into themselves a little bit. But when you lose 2-0 to West Ham, you don't really create a big chance. But you play like that for 70 minutes, which the intensity wasn't there, but they had control, because West Ham are not a team that will come out and get at you. But people don't want to hear that if you lose. And I think Ten Hag is not really in position at the moment to go and say that, even though he believes it. It's not going to wash with a lot of people. But just, I agree with you.
Yeah, I think we can only say, like, sometimes, like, when I watch Man United, I do think that kind of my brain is about to kind of fall out my mouth, because I know I'm about to say things that maybe people don't like, but I'm only going to say it because I'm being honest as someone who I think analyzes it from a certain angle. You know, don't get too high, don't get too low. So for 70 minutes, Man United did exactly what I've been begging Man United to do for a long time, and that is put the ball on the deck. Don't be frivolous. Don't be wasteful. But yes, please go create one or two chances. Now, as you said, if Garnacho takes one or two of those chances in that game, it's a completely different football match. The problem is that you allowed West Ham to get to that window of opportunity right at the end of a game where they can kind of turn the tide against you and take your weaknesses and make you suffer because of that. That's what happened in that game, yeah? That 20 minutes, that Paqueta ball was literally the only piece of quality in the game, where he spins it over the top of the defence. It's a great pass, and then we know what happened after that. So you lose the football match. That's where it went. I agreed with Erik ten Hag, but I agreed with him before he even said it. I said, no, Man United controlled that game, and I'm sure that's what he was telling his players. Right, let's fast forward now and jump to the next match, because I said this is never only just over one game. I think that first half against Aston Villa was massively concerning. Why? Well, Man United were playing their 4-1-4-1, Scott, yeah, like they do, and it looked like they never played it before. Haven't got a clue. You could actually see them in the four across with Eriksen and Bruno talking to each other and shouting at each other. You're supposed to be there, mate. Mate, you're supposed to be there. Lads, wider, wider. No, no, narrow, lads. It's like, what's going on? And you were rightfully 2-0 down because you couldn't defend a couple of set pieces. Like, that's Man United in a nutshell, isn't it? We could talk about Onana's goalkeeping again. I think that's on the agenda, because that wasn't a great moment, but he did save United in the second half. Fast forward to the second half, Scott, and the Jekyll and Hyde kicks in, doesn't it? United were brilliant in the second half. They went out there knowing they were 2-0 down, and they were either going to see their manager get potentially sacked off the back of this because it was so bad, or they were going to rise from the dead, from the ashes. And they chose the latter, thankfully. So we all felt great, obviously, after that. 3-2, it's a fantastic result. But Man United won that game with an XG of 1.1. United didn't really do a lot of good stuff. I know people think they did, but the truth is that you got away with it. And Villa, I think, with their high line, were there to be exposed on the counter-attack, and United exposed them. So fantastic result, kind of repositioned you again, gets you going again. But as weeks go on, Scott, Nottingham Forest now coming up, new manager bounce, you have got to be better. You've got to be better in your press and in possession, and you've got to have better XGs than 1.1.
This will set the tone, really, won't it? Because I think we're jumping. It seems United are never more than a defeat away from crisis, and that's specifically a point at the moment. They need, and Ten Hag really needs to win this Forest game, because it'll set the narrative again. You don't get too high, don't get too low. Unfortunately, that it's either very, very low or very, very high.
Yeah. It's in a roller coaster always.
That's the way that it is at the minute. And I think if Ten Hag can just, he needs to win more to just alleviate pressure off him completely. Just to, if you go in, you go in 1 month or so playing one Premier League match, fingers crossed they go through in the FA Cup as well. Wigan away in it. So not far to go. But he really needs to take 3 points from this game. United did it last season. I think it'll be a difficult one. Forest is a really good atmosphere, very strong. Nuno will probably get them set at some point defensively in this kind of thing. I know they lost at home to Bournemouth when they reduced to 10 men recently as well. But, you know, just for Ten Hag's sake, he needs his players to do what he's asking them to do and to take their chances on that day, because otherwise, we're going to be embroiled again in, will they sack him? Will Ineos sack him? When are they going to sack him? Like, he's had enough, even if it's like a 1-0 defeat or something like that. But United need to stay in touch with the teams above them. They absolutely have to, because there's a real risk that if they don't win this game, that other teams will play more matches like during this. There's like a winter break that each team gets about 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
It's staggered throughout the month. There's a real danger that they could just fall so far behind, and then even though they'll have games in hand, you don't trust that United will win those games in hand at the moment, do you? So very, very important to actually build on what happened against Aston Villa. Actually build on it, but we can't say that they will.
Yeah, Man United are, to steal some Americanisms, they're 10-8, yeah? 10 wins and 8 defeats in the Premier League, which in itself is a mad stat line. It's quite rare that you see a team with quite a lot of wins but quite a lot of defeats in that manner. One draw, obviously, in the middle there at Anfield. I think the whole thing of it is, Scott, is that, again, if you want to kind of have a bit of blue sky thinking, if you were rather, say, than 10-8, you were, say, 12-6, yeah, you'd be level with Man City. So I think the bigger stat line when we look at a lot of this stuff is the goal difference, how horrendously bad Man United are. I think they're in negative equity still. I think they're -3 or -4 or something like that. And -5, Scott's, I'm doing a kind of...
I think it's 5. I want to say it's 5.
Something like that. I'm thinking Scott's checking now as I yabber away. But I think the whole point of it is that showed this season...
No, -4. It's -4.
-4, that if you'd scored some more goals, like, it sounds as kind of as arbitrary as that, if you'd managed to know how to put the ball in the net, then you probably actually would be where you were wanted to be, or even further ahead, you probably might be above Man City. So I don't want to use City just as the bar this year, because City are underperforming. But Man United are also underperforming. And it's about how far is it back to where you want to be? Well, guess what? Not that far. Like, just sort some things out. So I think the good thing against Aston Villa, Scott, was that we saw 3 goals go in the back of the net, and that was really important.
From
so what
forwards.
Was it? From forwards. And do you know what? We can talk around the subject a little bit today, because what did we see? Marcus Rashford returned. Now, I don't think Rashford was brilliant, but Marcus Rashford made a difference. He absolutely made a difference. Just, I think, his presence in what he does. You know, he makes that pass, obviously, for Garnacho for the first goal that's offside. And he makes the second pass as well. Now, that's what you want from Marcus in the wider area, especially off the left. But obviously, the goals from Garnacho were great as well. He took his chances really well. But then, of course, Rasmus Højlund gets his first goal in the Premier League. And for confidence, you could see that. Like, you saw Onana sprint the length of the pitch to go jump on the boy. And it means so much to them. Do you know what I mean? From a first half of, like, nothingness, where you can't even sort yourself out, to a second half where you are Manchester United, the DNA in your blood runs deep. You went for it and you got it. You have to build off that, Scott. That's how it goes. Now, we need more goals from those people. We need Rashford to be back in the team and playing at his highest level. I don't think he had a great game, but he's coming back off an illness. Bruno, in the second half, higher up the pitch, Scott, in the 10. Yes, please. More of that. I don't want to see Bruno in the 6. I want to see him higher up the pitch. Great counter press from him when he wins the ball, slides Rashford in, and Rashford puts the ball across for Garnacho to score. We need more of that because that influences scoring goals.
Where are we then in the sense of usually with managers when we're at this point, we see that they down tools. I don't want to throw accusations, but I think that like that Watford game with Ollie,
yeah,
you know, and there were other matches, the late ones with Mourinho, there was a big defeat at West Ham where I remember under Jose Mourinho where I was like, wow, that he hasn't got long left. Do you think we're at that point? Like, because how can you go from where United have been in the first half against Villa to turning it around and winning? Because I feel like I've not had a moment yet. I think it's been suggested to me at times where I thought, oh, maybe they're not playing for him. But then I can't double down on it and say that they actually... I think he's still got them. I really do. And I think... You see the effort levels in the second half, like the amount of appetite, to go and win the ball back, this kind of thing is really there. And I think what you're seeing with Ten Hag is, I think it's working at times. I'll ask you this question as well, Rob. Do you think we're starting to see a style of play creep through? Because I think I might be in the minority. I think we are, personally. I think we're seeing it in spurts. But I think what Ten Hag asks for is so much energy that you have to put that in all the time. I think the style is energy, press high, win it high up, quick transition. I think that's what we're looking at. I don't think it's 80% of possession like Man City. I think it's more along those lines. I think we're seeing it, and maybe Aston Villa, the fact that they play such a high line, maybe it was easier to do it. But we're seeing it more in matches now. So I'm seeing this... criticism. What are United meant to be? I think we see it in pockets, but not consistently enough, because I think maybe the players aren't the right fits for the system and they can do it in spurts. What do you think?
No, I do not. I agree with you. And I think we've said it over time, is that I think we all have an idea and know what Erik ten Hag would really like to do. If he create his perfect team with the perfect tactics and go out every week, we know exactly what he would do. They would be called Ajax. So that's what we see with him, is that he would like to be able to pack the middle at times, be able to play off the counter press, counter punch teams and get in transition and be able to use your natural pace that you have in your forwards there to be able to get forward. Now people might say, well, is that a style of football? Because I think, again, everything is compared today to, say, Pep Guardiola. Pep Guardiola owns the word style. We saw Manchester City only last night kind of play a really tough game of football, but kind of their stylistic properties come forward when they've got the ball, being able to move from back to front. Now, I think Erik ten Hag would like that, but I think the problem is, Scott, with the players, and I'm going to use a term here that's wholly unscientific, is that the players sometimes are a bunch of idiots. Yeah, that's what they are. In the first half against Aston Villa, that was an idiot performance, right, from a lot of them. If they are on £200,000-£300,000 a week and they can't sort each other out and can't communicate, it is because they're idiots. It's not because, oh, Erik ten Hag hasn't worked this little bit of tactic out, or on the training ground, they didn't do this. No, sorry, they've played 4-1-4-1 for a year. They're idiots. So when I watched that performance, I was like you, I actually tweeted out, you know, this looks like we're going to get the manager sack performance. Now, I don't think that that's a we've lost the dressing room performance. I think that that's just, oh, lads, can we be bothered?
Not following process, yeah.
How am I supposed to do it? What does Erik ten Hag say in every presser to us? We should follow the plan. When we follow the plan, we win. It's as basic as that. He tells the players that. I think the problem is, Scott, in that first half, they were probably more frightened of Aston Villa than they were of going to win the football match. But when they were 2-0 down after making mistakes at the back, they then lost that fear and went, let's get to work for 45 minutes because we can run for 45 minutes, lads, can't we? And they sorted themselves out. When you saw their press, Scott, in the second half, it was like watching a different football team. It wasn't the same football team from the first half, but yet it's the same players. So the only reason I can put forward of why it didn't work in the first half is not the manager. It's just that they're idiots. That's all it comes down to. And if I'm Erik, I'm in the dressing room going, idiots. Get moving, do as I tell you, get on with the job. So, and I'm shouting here and getting kind of animated, but that's how I felt. I was just like, you either turn up and do your job, or you let Dave Brailsford watch you from the stand for the first time. And Dave Brailsford's going, selling him. He doesn't represent this football club. He runs and then doesn't bother. He hasn't got any skill. And there's all of that. I think that Dave Brailsford in the weeks ahead will be absolutely doing no matter what Man United do on a football pitch. But some of this is obvious, Scott. So well done to United for winning that game. But just stop making us have heart attacks in football matches.
It's so puzzling, isn't it? Because every defeat that comes along, it's, oh, well, the manager needs to go. I think United have lost so many matches this season. That's a completely valid question. Absolutely valid.
10-8.
Completely valid.
It's mad.
10-8. It's a completely valid question to say that the manager is not doing what is expected of him, because United are too far down the league to justify giving him absolute. I know I've suggested this as well. I would say just give him the rest of the season, but I'm actually seeing enough in pockets to, like, as I said just now, to say that I think I know where he's trying to take the team. It's just Rob's technical term of bunch of idiots, I think.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Did you notice more kids on the pitch? You know?
Eight graduates. The most, I think it's the most four Premier League games of the season.
He looked at Van Gore and Hannibal in the last few minutes. Not an experienced head. Not an experienced head. He looked at the kids, the energy to come on and see the game out.
Maybe he's watching our show, Scott. Maybe he's watching our show when we say go with the kids. Because I think that was at the end of that game, Scott, when he went with the kids. My heart did flutter a little bit. I did kind of go, oh, no, what if this goes wrong? And they blame the kids. And Hannibal goes around and hacks someone round in the air and gets sent off. And then Dan Gore gives the ball away, like, in front of the back four, like happened to, like, Kobbie Manu the other day, where he gives the ball away and makes one bad mistake. But you can't judge him on those things. Well, she shouldn't. I think that Ten Hag has been working with that balance for the whole period that he's been at the football club, about who he can trust and what he can do. And to bring Gore and Hannibal on to see the game out, to give you energy and technicality, all for it. Because I think I want to see that is that I wouldn't call the kids idiots, you see. If they make mistakes, they're not idiots. They're kids. They're 18. And I can you can give a kid a hug and say, don't do that again. Let's work on that together, yeah? But when you're kind of 25, 26, 27, 28 and onwards, no, I'm sorry. Like, you're getting to a point where it can only be tolerated for so long. And if you're the manager of anything, that's how it works with staff, is that it starts with the top. We train them, and it gets to a point where you're just kind of like cracking heads. You're just like going, no, we need to be better. And I think that's kind of what he did at half time. He would have just been saying, do the same things, stick to the plan, and guess what? You might win. Even at the end of the game, Scott, you know, when we scored the goals, I didn't really massively celebrate at all. I just kind of sat there because it was more relief. And even Erik ten Hag after the game, he wasn't like, my boys. He was like, yeah, we made tough work of that, didn't we? You know, 3-2, but we won and I'm happy and my team deserve all of the credit. You know, he just says the same things all the time, doesn't he? So that's what I think will we see now in the process of Man United in the next transfer window and beyond, is that you now need to go and get players that are less idiotic, take responsibility for their game.
I prefer less idiot.
Less idiot. That could be the title of this show, isn't it? Man United are less idiot, you know, in the future.
Or need to be. Look at the goals they conceded. There's no way you should concede either of those. Like,
no.
You know, like the first one bobbles in the box and goes in the corner and nobody knows what the hell to do with it.
Nope.
The second one, everybody switches off and some guy, Dendonka, runs around the back in acres.
It's madness. Again, we saw at the start where Bailey was behind Onana, whispering in his ear. Actually whispering in his ear. Like, it was like, that's what he was doing. He's going, and Onana, you can see, is like, well, now, I don't think it was Onana's fault for that, because when the ball comes into the box, it's absolutely imperative that one of your centre-backs gets ahead on it. You know, it's pretty low trajectory. You can get there. Even if you get a foot on it and put it in your own net, get there somehow. You know, find a way to beat the opponent. But what happens, we see it so often, don't we, when a ball swung into the box and everyone goes, stand still, and it ends up in the back of the net. And what do you feel at that moment? Idiots. That's what I felt. I was like, what are you lot doing? But we see this all the time. And I think with the second goal as well, is just don't repeat it. Like, don't allow Villa to get a foothold because you're feeling bad about yourself. And that was why you were 2-0 down.
And how quickly, Rob, did that goal come? That second goal?
Too quickly.
Straight after.
And even when we scored, even when we scored in the second half, I said to my son, I went, problem is Man United normally concede within like 1 minute. And each time that Villa got the ball, they were on us within like a split second, because United had backed off, gone to sleep. And it was like, oh, well, let's give Villa a chance to get back in it. And Villa nearly did. In each goal, each of the three goals, Villa nearly scored straight after. And you were like, if you're Erik ten Hag, you must be having kittens in that technical area. What can you actually do? You can only scream so much at this lot. So those things need to be fixed over a long period of time, Scott. They won't get fixed for the next game with Nottingham Forest. My fear with Nottingham Forest is that they now look a little bit more organised under Nuno. They will be more organised. They'll be like Wolves from a few years ago, kind of strong, can hit you on the press, can hit you on the counter-attack, and will make mincemeat of you in certain scenarios. But United need to be ready for that. United need to go with a better team. So as long as we do our pressing and all of our work, we'll beat you. But they don't do it, Scott. And I don't think that's on Ten Hag. I really don't. I don't think it's the manager kind of making it toxic like we saw with other managers. I always use Jose as the benchmark of toxicity, because even though Jose is a Hall of Fame coach, that's where we got to with him and the players. But the players are still the same players. They're still the same bunch of idiots. And sometimes they have to be better. And I think they have to take that on now. If Ineos do anything in the next month or two or three as they do the root and branch assessment, I think they'll look at these players and say, if you want to be at this football club, you need to take more responsibility. And I think that's really what it comes down to.
But how is that then? How does that translate to the wider picture? Because if United lose on Saturday, you know what the question is going to be. But we can have all these conversations about idiot that we want. But the fact of the matter is, what drives the narrative is Man United's manager.
What drives the narrative in terms of the media and everything, I think when we talk about fans talking about it, yes, of course, victories and defeats do that. And Erik ten Hag even said in his presser, he went, I know people only care about winning and all of that, but I'm looking at other things as well. And I think you make your decisions, Scott, in the long term on those other things. So it's not just about winning and losing games. Of course, that's the be-all and end-all for a lot of people. But you actually look at the stats and you kind of go, well, hang on, we had a stats line of 1.1 XG on the day. So that is not acceptable. So when we go away tomorrow, we fix that. We work on that. We don't work on the other stuff that maybe people don't like. We work on the core parts of football. And you find ways to create more chances, to be more effective, to work harder in your press, All of that counts, Scott, whether you're winning games or losing games. And that's how you have to be as a manager. You have to be stoic. You have to be balanced and be able to say to the team, this is why you're not winning games and we have to go fix those things. So that's just the process, isn't it? How long Erik ten Hag gets to do that process, I think, is a completely different question.
I just want to talk about the, we mentioned the kids, there were three kids that started. Kobbie Mainoo, what hasn't really been talked about since that game, because obviously Garnacho and Højlund stole the headlines. We'll talk about those in a second. But I just wanted to talk about Kobbie Mainoo, because he made that mistake at West Ham and probably got a hell of a lot of stick for it.
Yeah.
You know, on the social channels, this kind of thing. But the way he just went about his business again.
Yeah.
Just makes such a, like, if United had more of him, more players like him, I think they'd be a lot better off. But I think,
yeah,
it's what you want really is for Kobbie Mainoo to go under the radar.
Totally,
he's that profile of player. You want him to go under the radar and to just not really just do all the basics right, keep United ticking over, and not really make any mistakes. Mistakes are inevitably going to happen. I think that West Ham one would have been a big test for him. It's like it never happened though to me.
And that's how it should be. Like that's what you teach players, is that you make a mistake, you think about it in the moment, you maybe try and rectify it in training, and you forget about it, get on with the game. And I think that you can do that with kids quite clearly, because you're always looking at progression. I think we look at Kobbie, if your number six is a star of any game, you're doing something wrong. Yeah, if your number six is a player you take out, you know, like David De Gea days, David De Gea will make 30 saves and people go, oh, David. Then David will make one error and people go, oh, David. You know, the whole point is your goalkeeper shouldn't be the hero in any football match. Not really. Your goalkeeper should do nothing. He should be more like Edison, where he just is a sweeper and plays the ball out, though Edison does make mistakes. So I think when you look at that with the youngsters, is that you must give them that platform to also fail, but then learn. And I think with Kobbie, he's a high learner. We know this already from his even younger days than he is now, is that that's always been a big thing with the coaching staff, say that this boy learns on the fly really well. I think he was really good in that game, Scott, because he did the basics without fuss. And in the second half, he allowed United to have a platform from the back areas in terms of coverage to be able to get going. It allowed Bruno to go higher up the pitch. Christian Eriksen, I think, went under the radar in the first half. Not great. Second half, I thought he played much better. And you had a midfield that was functioning. But it functions from the six, but all the glory goes to the eight and the 10. That's all right. That's how football works. Bruno Fernandes wants to be up that end of the pitch. But you need someone like Kobbie there at the back, looking after the centre-backs, looking after Johnny Evans. Like, I was worried about Evans in the first half, but I think Kobbie really helped him and they came together, lots of chatting between them, territory looked after. Watkins didn't do a lot after that, did he? You know, for me, like, Watkins was looking to exploit that space. And Villa in the second half themselves, I think, went a bit inward and didn't really kind of play their best game. But it comes from your six looking after other parts of the pitch, but they should never be the hero.
Alejandro Garnacho got man of the match, two goals plus one that was ruled out for offside. He'd never played on the right, really, that you would. I think one of his relatives came out and said he's never played on the right hand side. But
never played there.
Any comments on him, Robert? I think the big thing is he just took the chances that he had, and I think makes a hell of a lot of difference. And he should. Do you think he be at home in that position now in the coming weeks, or is it more of a, because Rashford played all right on the left, maybe I think he's in the start at Forest potentially. What of Garnacho?
Yeah, look, he missed the chances against West Ham. That's why you walked away with the defeat. You know, you still need to score goals. So, like, I think the thing is with Garnacho, we're talking about heroes, is that, yeah, if you're one of the forwards, you should be one of the heroes. That's how it works. You score the goals, you take the glory, and you deserve it. I thought it was a brilliant performance by Garnacho on the right-hand side, not just talking about the goals. I think he actually played the position really well. Like you highlighted there, he's never actually played on the right. When he was in the youth team and we used to watch him, he'd either play off the left or centre forward, sometimes playing a little bit of 10. So he would play those roles, but he never played off the right, which is, you know, he's a right-footed player. It's kind of weird, but I think we see that inversion is what managers like to do, which is why right-footers end up playing on the left sometimes. I think more importantly, Scott, looking at the goals, is that Garnacho is the type of player who is not going to be scared to miss. Right. And that's really important when you're a forward, is that you will take those opportunities and you won't fear missing. Now, I think when we look at, say, like Højlund, who obviously got his his really historic, important goal, is that maybe at times you can look at this season where he has been scared to miss. You've seen him get the ball in the box and maybe he's laid it off for an oncoming, you know, third man run or something like that. And you're like, just hit it, boy. Hit it and have a go. And he's tried to play team ball sometimes. You saw with that moment there where he gets his goal, Scott, what does he do? Ball is bouncing, swing, volley, goal. That's the perfect thing you want for your number nine, isn't it? So I would like to see Garnacho play a little bit more of the right, but I'm not convinced yet, because we could have the next game at Forest. He could play on the right and have a stinker because he doesn't know the position very well. You know, if he lets things go behind him and doesn't run the rule, doesn't look after the fullback, then that's all part of the game, isn't it? And that's part of the learning. But no problem with 18, 19-year-old Scott making mistakes for me, because I watch that every day of the week as long as they're learning.
We'll talk about Rasmus Højlund in a second. We would like to, but we're recording this on Thursday, releasing it on Friday. But as we record, you don't know this yet, Rob, unless you've been looking at your phone. Andre Onana has been called up for AFCON, as has Sofyan Amrabat as well.
Yeah, so, we knew that a while ago.
Knew that a while ago. So yeah. United will have to be relying on for their games in, I don't actually know the dates, but obviously United play one game in January in the Premier League, which is Tottenham, who will be heavily affected by this tournament and the Asia Cup as well, because Son will be going away as well, I think. But yeah, that'll be an issue for United to sort out over the coming weeks. But let's talk about Rasmus, shall we? Because I think we'll talk a little bit about Forest before we go as well. But Rasmus, finally, lovely goal for him. What do you want to say on him? Because I just thought it was such a nice moment. And I feel like he's been getting a lot of stick. He's 20 years old, you know, and I think you can tell how much it meant to him, how much relief was in his face when he scored that goal. And it was just really nice to see that moment had come for him. But fingers crossed he can go on a run now.
A good striker's finish, and we do need to remember that this boy has not really got a lot more experience than someone like Garnacho or Manu. Like, he's played more games, obviously, back in Serie A and beyond, but he doesn't really have, I think, the deep levels of experience that other strikers do. Let's just look at Aston Villa at the other end of the pitch. Someone like Ollie Watkins, who's worked his way through the leagues and made his way up to becoming an England international. So I think when you look at Højlund, you're going to have to be patient. I still think that he can contribute towards what you want to do over the next year, two or three. I do think you need to go buy another striker to help him, someone who can score goals, whether someone who's a bit older and a little bit more experienced. Go find your Cavani. Wouldn't it be nice to have a Cavani now, that kind of player? But you can't rely on an older statesman. You have to work with all of them. And I think for him, just the reaction of the whole team when he put the ball in the net was just this moment of joy. Johnny Evans' face, like, talked about Johnny Evans a minute ago, as he ran looking like a 12-year-old that just met Santa Claus for the first time. You know what I mean? Like, big, And it meant so much to them, Onana running the length of the pitch. So a good moment, but you need to bottle those moments and take them away. Go to training and go, right, I need to sip off that elixir now. I need to have that in my veins every match. I need to remember what that felt like, and I need to work as hard as I can. One thing I'll just say about Højlund Svendit is that I actually think his work rate in recent weeks has declined. He's not nearly, the first 6 or 10 games, his work rate was brilliant. I still think he works hard, but he looks like someone who's in a funk. You know, like, it's like, everything I'm doing is not working and no one's passing to me. I saw a metric of passes to Højlund, and you can totally see why the striker's not happy. It's pathetic. It's really bad for him, is that they're not passing him the ball. But he took that chance, Scott, and sometimes you just need that one chance. Get going. He scored 5 goals in the Champions League. But I think that still makes him top scorer in the Champions League somehow. So he can score goals, but you've got to create chances. And that means you need a better XG than 1.1. You need this XG to be up to 2. And you might be able to help your striker score more goals.
United go to Forest, and we'll be back in the new year to talk about whatever the results of that is, because this United's final game of the year. Fingers crossed they can get through it with a win. And just, I'm so sick of the noise, Rob. I'm so sick of, will he get sacked? Will he get sacked? I'm just bored of it.
We
I'm
live in
so
perpetual noise, though, don't we? It's perpetual noise in our worlds.
It would just be nice if United can go for Saturday to Monday, what, 8-9 days with no real noise apart from looking at what's happening behind the scenes with the takeover of the sporting control from Ineos and all of this kind of stuff. And
yeah,
what will happen in the January window? Hopefully we can have a bit of leeway to talk about that kind of thing next week as well.
And hopefully we'll be talking more also about someone we haven't spoken about outwardly, and that's Kambala. So, you know, this is a player who I think, you know, we've not spoken about him because of the injuries that he's had previously. He's played at Manchester United, picked up. He's the under-19 captain for France. You know, he's a proper top player in terms of that age bracket. He's just never been able to do it at United, never been able to get him fit. So here he is now contributing. He's another player that came on late to see out the game against Aston Villa. But I actually think, Scott, that again, as funny things have happened towards the season, is that while you're thinking about your Maguires and this returning, and Luke Shaw obviously was out of that game, you might end up seeing more starts for him. And I wouldn't be surprised, because I think that technically he's got the game to play that. He's a ball progressor. He can take that channel and own it and go forward with the ball. We saw it in his debut against West Ham. I thought he did that really well, you know, a bit of ball progression from centre-back. So who knows? We might see that the future partnership as we go forward is Lisandro Martinez as your left side, Kambala is your right side, maybe. You know, I'm not against that. I think you can develop the boy if you're in this motion of developing youngsters. And I would like to see more of that now rather than less.
Yep. One for the future again. We'll be back in the future. We'll be back next week. In a future year, even. 2024. This is our final show of 2023. But we'll be back, hopefully doing more, bigger, better than ever in 2024. I know we have ambitions to scale up and do better, Rob, but
we do, definitely.
We'll see. Hopefully you've enjoyed everything that we've done this year, or most of it at least. Really appreciate all the love and support and comments and messages that we get. Really, really appreciate it. And keep them coming. If you like the show, let us know. If you want us to do anything different, let us know. We're very much open to what you guys want to hear, and we'll endeavor to always improve in this kind of thing. And we just really appreciate all the love and support that we've had throughout 2023, and hopefully into 2024 we can go to bigger and better things. Rob, anything you'd like to say before we go?
Yes, happy new year to everyone, and thank you to our audience. And you know, without you guys we don't do this show. It's just the truth. And we will try and always give you an opinion from the heart, both technically and emotionally. We'll try and tell you what we think about Manchester United. That's what this show is about. That's why we always talk incessantly about them. But it's you guys that listen. And if you didn't listen, we wouldn't do it. So keep telling your friends, keep sharing the show, keep interacting with us on socials. We'll try and do our best to keep up with that. And hopefully in 2024, we can bring you more, obviously, about the new ownership in terms of what they want to do and some of our contacts, and give you some reveals on some of that information, but also talk about the football, and hopefully Manchester United winning more football matches than they have done in the last few months.
Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, and watch us on YouTube, The Promised Land and Manchester United Podcast. Like the video, subscribe, leave a comment, and hit the notification bell on YouTube so you never miss a show. And follow us on social media at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B, and @TPLMUFC. Until next year, everyone, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching from Rob and I. Have a great new year, and we'll see you soon.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.